Good morning. You know, I'm not an OSU fan, not from here. I'm from a little south of here, and the team that I was really cheering for yesterday actually did win. If you watched, I don't know if you watch basketball, we had a great game against Louisville. So I was pretty excited about sports yesterday. I know many of you may not be, but I do have to say this, from following the game and the season this year with the Buckeyes, it has been, by all accounts, just a fantastic season. I mean, when you think about Coach Day's first year, I don't know that we could expect anything better from a team and a coach than what we saw with him this year. So really, I mean, I get that it is a letdown, a beautiful letdown in some ways. It has been a great season, and it's not what so many people wanted, but still a pretty remarkable achievement. So I'm going to show a movie clip in just a second. Well, actually, I guess Clint is. But I want to set the stage. When True saw this, it's from The Lord of the Rings. Yesterday, she rolled her eyes. Is it really? Really? Is there anything that you don't, The Lord of the Rings or everything? And I said, no, we're not just about The Lord of the Rings. We like superheroes, and we like Star Wars and space and aliens. And really, if a movie doesn't have like explosions or sword fighting or war or dragons or something, why would we even make it or watch it? The real issue, I guess the gist of that is you should pray for True. Because that's what our house is like all the time. The kids haven't watched it yet, but Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Have y'all said, that's perfect right there. Right? Every movie should have something like that. Anyway, in this scene, the two main characters are going on a journey. Well, there's a lot of main characters, but these two are going on a journey. And really, they're almost beset by failure and struggle and difficulty and despair at every single step. And at one of their lowest points to date, they stop for a minute and they realize that actually the path ahead, as bad as the one they've been on has been, the path ahead is probably going to be worse. Let's see if we can roll that.
I can't do this, Sam.
I know. It's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here.
It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing. The shadow.
Even darkness must pass.
A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. What are we holding on to, Sam? There's some good in this world, Mr. Fertile. And it's worth fighting for.
In this journey they've been on, it starts out, these two guys are, if you haven't seen the movies, they're like half the size of adults, these little guys. And for them, the perfect life is having a little garden and growing their food and having a meal and a drink with their friends and their family and neighbors at the local pub and reading a good book. And just enjoying this pastoral life. It's almost a paradise if you want the simple life. And it is kind of like, wow, that'd be like a great place to just like detox for a couple of months. And they're really content not to be part of what they call the work of the big people, you know, where it's all dangerous and everybody's political and violent. But then this global struggle for good and evil comes crashing into their lives, and everything is turned upside down. And this little piece of jewelry drags them into an adventure that's full of danger and despair and betrayal and loss and hurt and death. And in the middle of it, they can't even see that it'll ever turn out okay. All they knew for sure was that as bad as it had been, it was going to get a lot worse if it ever got better. If. You ever feel like that? Do you ever feel like that's your life? It may get better, but it may not. But before it gets either better or worse, you know that you're going to go through a lot of really bad stuff. Some of you are dealing with some big, short of a miracle, incurable, unsolvable, unfixable problems. These are things that many of you will be wrestling with as long as you're on this side of heaven. This friend of mine at work just turned 50, and that's a big milestone. It's one where you realize, and there's really almost no escaping this, you've passed the halfway point. You're there. And so these questions start arising, like, what was it all for? Does my life have meaning? My life hasn't turned out like I expected or planned or intended at all. And those people are so depressing. I hate when I'm around that, because that's when, you know, it's really not fun to talk about. It's even worse to think about it, because then you start thinking about it yourself. Like, wow, is my life what I thought it would be? Have I done what I thought I would do by now? And I look at my life, and like the only thing I think of that's gone pretty well is my family. And so often when I think about that, I think that's gone well probably more in spite of me than because of me. Other goals I had for my life, like finances or career or whatever, haven't quite shaped up the way they thought. Even what I thought my life would be like in service to the kingdom hasn't been what I thought it would be. I always thought that if I made the right choices, that the kingdom would be positively impacted by me in a noticeable way, in a way that would be readily evident from far away. And I've got to say, by almost any objective measure, I don't think that's the case. I don't know if you think about things like that every once in a while, or if it's just when these milestones hit. Most of the time, I'm busy enough, and I'm distracted enough, and I find something to amuse myself enough that I can push those thoughts out of my head. It typically is what we associate with a midlife crisis. But I don't think it's at midlife anymore. For the past 30 years, I've spent most of my work in the kingdom and is working with people who are in college or young adults. So since I was a freshman in college, all the way through when I was a full-time minister, a campus minister, and then now with having kids who are in youth group or in college, that's been the focus of my life, that age group. And I hear these same questions from people that age, whether it was my generation, the Gen X crowd, whether it was the ones who came after me, the millennials, or whether it's the group that's in high school and college now. They're asking these questions like, what does it all mean? How can I make my life matter? Is it going to be worth it in 20 or 30 or 40 years? And here's the one that really gets me. If I can't know that it will be worth it 30 years from now, do I even want to start? Should I even try? That's why college students switch majors from accounting to engineering to being, you know, medical school or physical therapy or nursing or teaching or writing and whatever. It's why we as parents start getting really nervous as the bills keep coming and the majors keep changing and you keep hearing, I don't know what I want to do. And I would probably get a little more irritated about that if I didn't feel the same way. And I'm on my third career and, you know, I'll probably have another one before I'm done. I think it's why we check out so often. I think it's why we get so engrossed in TV and movies and video games and books, because maybe I want to reject the reality that I see and tune into some fantasy one. Where the story almost always comes out well in the end, and even if it doesn't, I can turn it off and walk away. I think through all this, we're breaking the heart of God. Not because he doesn't want us to ask tough questions, not because he doesn't want us to ask what's the purpose or what's the meaning. God's not afraid of our questions. I think it's because we aren't looking for the answers in the right places. I think he meant for us to live powerful, effective, meaningful, and fruitful lives. And when I say fruitful, I don't mean we're just going to get deeper. I'm not even sure what that means. I mean fruitful in that we're going to grow and we're going to change the world around us. But for that to happen, first, we have to be changed. But I don't think it's always like we think. So often, I think it's all about me. I think when I work, it's about me. Even when I serve in the kingdom, it's about me. And if I work hard enough, and if I keep my nose clean, and if I do the right things, then God will grant me success. Isn't that how it's supposed to work? Especially when we're doing work for God. Whether it's bringing people to church, whether it's trying to live a more Christ-like, whether it's sharing God's love. If I work hard and I keep my nose clean, and I serve others, God will grant me success, right? Then I start reading my Bible. It's always a dangerous thing. It's another thing I like about that movie. Frodo talks about a quote, how his uncle told him, it's always a dangerous thing going out on the road. You never know where it might take you. I think reading the Bible is like that. You never know what's gonna change. So I read the Bible and I meet this guy named Noah. And he's the only decent man left on earth. The only one God doesn't just want to strike dead. That's a little hard to imagine. That's the guy. And God says, Noah, build a boat. So let's forget about the fact that that Noah doesn't live on the ocean or on a lake or probably even on a river. Let's ignore the fact that we don't think it's ever even rained to this point. Just build a boat. And so Noah spends 100 years building a boat on dry land. The neighbors are talking about that crazy Noah. The lunatic over there, his family, the rest of his family, had to just completely reject him. They don't want to be associated with him. I would think, and I don't know this, I would think that his wife would be like, Noah, are you sure God said rain? Did he say maybe God's going to send pain for 40 days and 40 nights? By the way, what is rain? A few chapters later, I meet Abraham. He left everything. He left his family, his home, his town, and he went on a journey. And on that journey, he has trouble with the locals. He has trouble within his own family, with his nephew. He has trouble with his wife. They're barren. And all through this, for decades, God says, I'm going to bless you through your children and your descendants. And the whole world's going to be better because of it. And he has no kids. For decades. It'd be hard to talk about that promise with Sarah. It'd be hard to think about what that means. I know in the class on Sunday morning, the adults have gone through, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about that. And I don't know how I could reconcile this promise with what he's living. And then when he finally does have a son, God says, okay, I want him back now. No wonder he's called the father of the faithful. So we get to Moses. Somehow I think Moses always knew that he was going to be the one who delivered his people out of Egypt, that God would use him for that. So Moses at this point gets this crazy idea to rush into things when he's 40. That's when he begins. And the way he begins is he rushes in and he actually kills somebody. So he flees. He's not ready. God makes him wait in the desert watching sheep for 40 more years. And of course, once he does begin the journey, that trip's not a picnic. They complain at every turn. There's constantly in danger, constantly in turmoil within the camp and without. And so God makes them run around in circles for another 40 years. David, he's anointed by Samuel as king over all of Israel when he was a teenager. But Israel already had a king. And that king has a son. So David has to wait. Through numerous murder attempts, through years of hiding and living in caves, acting insane, taking refuge with his enemies, always on the run. And when he finally becomes king, decades later, he only gets part of it. He has to go through wars with his own people for another 7 years before he gets the full kingdom. I don't even want to talk about Job. Wrap your mind around that. Just because God bragged on how good this guy was, he lost all of his kids, all of his wealth in one day. He then got miserably sick, and his wife and the friends he had left turned on him. All because God bragged on him. And as far as we know, Job never gets the story. Never hears why. When he does get a chance to speak to God, the answer is, it's a little bit nicer than this, but probably a lot scarier. Shut your mouth. You're not God. I am. You skip to the New Testament. It doesn't really get better. Paul, he's shipwrecked 3 times. He's beaten by the Jews 5 times. He's beaten by the Greeks and the Romans 3 times. He's stoned once, constantly in mortal danger from his own countrymen and from foreigners. He's always struggling just to make ends meet, often belittled by the very people he's trying to save, all because God gave him a job to do. And because of that job, Satan threw everything he had at Paul to try and stop him. And many, many times, God let him be hit, and hit really hard. You know, I read about all these guys, and I start thinking that I'm trying to answer my questions, my deepest questions about life, about how does it matter, about how can I make a difference in the wrong places. About 15 years ago, a band called Switchfoot let out this album, The Beautiful Letdown. And it's become one of my favorites, just every song. And I mean, it's way too long to play, so we're not going to do that. I know, sorry. it's a lot easier to listen to this than probably to watch The Lord of the Rings, although I recommend you do that too. I do encourage you to listen to this album and just kind of go through like what it is that these guys are writing about and listen to their lyrics. It's a powerful message, The Beautiful Letdown. I want to read you just snippets of lyrics from the entire album. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Is it everything you dreamed it would be? Maybe we've been living with our eyes half open. Life is more than money. Life is more than girls. Life is more than $100 bills. I'm a nervous wreck, but I'll bet that TV set tells us what we want to hear. But none of these sound bites are coming in clear. We want more than this world has to offer. Everything inside screams for second life. We were meant to live for so much more. I want more than just okay. I want more than just a good time. More than fine. More than being bent on getting by. So welcome to the fallout. Welcome to the resistance. The tension is here between who you are and who you want to be. Between how it is and how it should be. It was a beautiful letdown when I crashed and burned. When I found myself unknown and hurt, it was a beautiful letdown. The day I knew that all the riches the world had to offer me would never do. In a world full of bitter pain and bitter doubt, I was trying so hard to fit in until I found out I don't belong here. Everything inside you know there's more than what you've heard. There's so much more than empty conversations filled with empty words. I miss you, God, more than I could know. Here I am. Won't you get me? Give me one more chance to see. Give me everything you are. Give me one more chance to be near you. When everything inside me looks like everything I hate, you are the hope I have for change. You are the only chance I'll take because you're raising the dead in me. We are a beautiful letdown, painfully uncool. The church of the dropouts and losers and sinners and failures and fools. Oh, what a beautiful letdown. I want to see miracles. To see the world change. Spirit, take me up in arms with you. You're raising the dead in me. I ask, what happens next? And I hear you say, I dare you to move. I dare you to lift yourself up off the floor. I dare you to move. So often I think that's what we're missing. I see the letdowns in my life. I think we all see them. We examine them, we scrutinize them, we wallow in them. We study them, we use them as our excuses for not getting up. So often we can't see the beauty that lies just under the surface. I can't imagine what the disciples felt like on Friday night. They left everything and everyone for a dream. And now it's over. I can't imagine what Joseph and Nicodemus were thinking when they pleaded for Jesus' body and laid it in a tomb. What were they thinking when they were in hiding on Saturday, wondering if there was going to be a knock at the door with soldiers coming in to drag them out? Or maybe just wondering if it's just all over. How do we go back to our lives? Now, I guess the fishermen could go back to their dad and their boats, but some of them probably couldn't. I mean, Matthew walked away from his tax collector's table. I'm pretty sure they filled that spot the next day. On Sunday morning, I can't imagine what those women were feeling like as they were waiting until the sun rose because they hadn't slept. Knowing they couldn't really do the work to get it prepared, but within seconds, they had everything they needed and were out the door just to prepare the body. The word letdown really doesn't do it justice. But there was a power on Sunday morning, and a beauty too. In the resurrection, defeat and despair turned into victory and hope. It didn't mean it would be easy, though. By almost all accounts, it actually got harder for them. Their journey was just beginning. Now think about Peter's life. He didn't really want to follow Jesus. He wasn't that interested. I think he would have been content to stay on his boat and listen to Jesus from afar. And sure, if you want to come into my house and heal my mother-in-law so she can make dinner, that'd be awesome. But, that's close enough. But then he hangs out with Jesus for a long time. He sees miracles. He hears his teaching. And then pretty soon, he's teaching. And he's sent out to perform miracles. His expectations rise. He sees Jesus walking on water. And for whatever else you can say about him, he's the only guy who saw it and said, "I want to step out of the boat too." And he did. And it worked for a few seconds. And when the time came, he's the guy who said, "You're the Son of God, and I'll stay with you to the end. I'll die for you." After he denied Jesus and Jesus died, I can't imagine the bitterness he had and the despair and the just disappointment in himself. In a lot of ways, I wonder if even when Jesus came back and revealed himself with the disciples, if that didn't actually make the bitterness a little bit worse, because then his lack of faith was truly exposed. But But Jesus raises the dead in Peter. He tells him to take care of his church, and Peter becomes the leader of the church, the front man. It gets to the point that even his shadow heals people. What a beautiful letdown. Peter had to realize that there's nothing good that would come directly out of him. The only good he can do is the good that God does through him. Peter had to go through this beautiful letdown before he could become the rock of the church that Jesus declared him to be. And years later, he writes, "Rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ." And then this one, "God paid a ransom to save you from the empty life you inherited from your fathers." I don't know what your letdown is. I don't know if it's a failed marriage, if it's a problem with your kids, if it's losing your job, not finishing the education you wanted, if it's financial problems. Maybe it's a chronic health issue. For some of you, it may be all those things and more. I don't know how this life you have isn't what you thought it would be. But there is a beauty in the letdown, just beneath the surface. A beauty that only comes out when we move from being self-centered to being God-centered. When we move from trying to control everything to trusting God to be in control. When we move from seeking pleasure to seeking growth, and from acting due to pressure to acting out of love. I dare you to move. I dare you to embrace the letdown. The church that Jesus left when he ascended into heaven wasn't a lot bigger than this group. And just a few decades later, they had changed the entire world. And now, over 1 billion people claim to follow Christ because of that group of a few hundred people. Emerge through this letdown. As the worship team comes up, I just want to challenge you. There are a lot of ways you can start off in 2020 and move toward this beautiful letdown. The first one, though, is to proclaim that Jesus is the Lord of your life. If you haven't taken that first step, I pray that you'll do so now as we stand and sing.